The Tom Woods Show, episode 2155.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm giving away three free courses from my Liberty Classroom. One of them is ex-Marxist Michael Rechtenwald teaching you about critical theory so you can understand leftism and fight it better, as well as our course on how Alexander Hamilton screwed up America and the history of the conservative and libertarian movements. Check it out at 3freecourses.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. You know, I've got a non-depressing episode for you. Sometimes these days, a lot of these episodes are feel like you're being ground down into the dirt by events, and I have to cover what's going on in the world. So sometimes it can be a little bit discouraging. So much so that about a week and a half ago, I think I released an episode, maybe a few weeks ago, I released an episode where I actually put in parentheses at the end of the episode title, non-depressing episode. Well, I'm happy to say this one joins that one among the ranks of the non-depressing episodes, because we're joined by our old friend, Connor Boyack, creator of the Tuttle Twins children book series. He also runs a state-level think tank in Utah, the Libertas Institute. Is that what it's called?
It is, yeah. Okay. And now we're actually working nationally, so we've grown quite a bit.
Oh, is that, geez, I mean, you just do so much unbelievable work. I can't even sit here and list all the things, because you've written books outside the children's book genre also. In fact, I wrote the foreword to one of them. Yeah. So you've just done a whole bunch of things, but we really, really owe you a debt for this current thing you've done, which is the release of a brand new children's book on American history. So we're going to get to that. We're going to talk about it. And the book is called, I was searching just now because I thought there had to be a subtitle I missed, but it really is just called America's History. But the dates are 1215 to 1776. Now, I feel like in 1776, it's just starting to get good. So what's going on here? This has to be just a volume one.
Well, as Ron Swanson would say, that's like when America was born, right? That's America's birthday. That's when history began. to which I would say, you know, okay, well, in the centuries preceding, then it's the gestation period for America to be born. So our book starts all the way back in the 1200s. Well, why? Because we want kids and frankly, their parents to understand why America was born. You got to understand colonialism, how that was happening, why the different types of colonies and so forth. But to understand the colonies and why colonization happened, you have to understand the exploration, why these people were risking their lives to embark on these adventures across the seas. Well, they were driven by economic opportunity and looking for spices and all kinds of things. Well, why? Well, because, you know, the Silk Road and all this trade that was happening was really motivating people to bring things from distant lands to these trading centers. And so if you go back and you really think about Marco Polo and the Silk Road and some of these early encounters, those were kind of the events that started to unfold and spill over into the ultimate colonization, which then became America. So for us, the story of America, it's not, you know, the 1619 project. If anything, this is the 1215 project, Magna Carta, Silk Road, the early days that really kind of led into what we saw happen in 1776. So we wanted to go back to kind of the quote-unquote beginning, the early days, and show how formative a lot of these early events were in the intellectual development that ultimately spilled over into revolution.
I think that's a great idea. That is really a great idea, because sometimes people are inclined to think that the United States was just created out of somebody's mind. You know, people had ideas and they gave rise to this great country, and that there's almost no need for history because we have reason and we used reason to establish our republic. But that ain't so. That, I mean, we used reason, but we also used experience, and we also are very much indebted to our history that goes back beyond well before the Declaration of Independence. So it's very, very good that you did this. So how many volumes are you planning?
So, you know, we're thinking this will ultimately be a 4-volume series, and your listeners will kind of appreciate this. I want to also say this is very tentative. We're not committed to this, but as Elijah and I have been mapping this all out, tentatively what we're thinking is volume one here ends with 1776, so it's birth of a revolution. And then volume two would be 1776 through like 1789, so birth of the Republic. Volume three could be new nation in America all the way through war between the states, post-Reconstruction, so then it's birth of nationalism. And then we could go from war between the states all the way through the progressive era, World War One, World War Two, end with Dwight D. Eisenhower's farewell address where he warns about the military-industrial complex. So then that book would be Birth of an Empire. And so it shows these like transitions of America from revolution and decentralization and, you know, self-sovereignty and whatever into a republic, into nationalism, into empire. And so we feel like those four different episodic or categories would allow us to have a four-volume series. What we know we're actually going to do is at least volume two. We definitely want to get through, you know, the Constitution and so forth. Volumes three and four are iffy. Right now, it really just depends on how this first book does, but we're already working on volume two, and so that's the plan.
I hope it does extremely well, because I would love to see all these volumes produced. I mean, you know better than anybody how much parents have wanted to have a series like this. And I get asked all the time, so you must get asked even doubly all the time, what can I use to teach American history to my kids? And I barely know what to say to them, that there really isn't anything that's really all that good that's not just cloying, you know, propaganda or, I don't know, it's just, there's nothing I can recommend in good conscience.
It's tough. And even over the years, as we've done Tuttle Twins, we have a lot of people saying, hey, we need, you know, what about a history book? I'm like, well, our books aren't really history books. We'll talk about like some historical events, but they're not like really deep history stuff. But I always kind of felt like, isn't there enough out there? There's tons of like history books. That's not our value proposition. We're focused on these like libertarian type philosophical ideas. But then this was about 2.5 years ago. I went on Amazon, eBay. I bought a whole bunch of books, social studies books, history books that are focused on like K through 12. And so I'm flipping through all of these and they all have the names and the dates and the facts and the, you know, superficial crap. But like none of them have the philosophy, the ideas. You know, you'll probably know this, Tom, but John Adams once said that the real American Revolution happened in the 15 years preceding the first shot being fired at Lexington and Concord. Well, what was he talking about? You know, we all think of the revolution as triggered with that event. And in the years that followed, what he was talking about, of course, was the intellectual revolution, the influence of John Locke, life, liberty, property, the colonies, these ideas spreading like wildfire. And these books, these social studies and history books for kids, drilling them with all these random superficial factoids, are almost completely devoid of any substantive mention of, for example, John Locke, or about these philosophical ideas. And so the mission of our book is, sure, to teach what happened, as any history book should, but more importantly, to teach the ideas. We talk about all the time, those who don't learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. And yet kids today are not at all being taught to learn from the past. They're just being taught about the past. And so I think then it's no surprise why these kids all turn out to be socialists, the social justice warriors, Marxists and the like, because they're completely disconnected from our history. They have no literacy about what happened in the past, the mistakes, the failures. And so they can't learn from them. So they're all too eager to repeat them because they're totally ignorant. We want to stop that. I'd like to not live in a dystopian future. I'd like to learn from the lessons of the past. So our book is designed in very like intentional ways to say, hey, kids, here's what happened, but here's how it applies to our modern world. Or, you know, how do you think it applies to your life today? And really prompt these discussions in families about, okay, great, this thing happened 250 years ago. Big whoop, right? Like, what does it mean for us today? And that's the mission of this book, is to focus more on the ideas and the philosophy that they were learning and fighting for than the, you know, what type of musket did they use? And did they eat hardtack?
Thank you. By the way, thank you so much for that. Because for some reason, people think that if you're a historian, you're necessarily an antiquarian who's just interested in old things. Like, oh, you must want to go to this museum that'll show you what people wore in 1607 or something. And I don't care. I mean, and I don't have anything against people who like that. That's wonderful they're interested in that. I have zero interest in that. I am just like you. I'm interested in the ideas that motivated people. I want to say something that I know you, as humble Connor Boyack, would not say. Therefore, I'm going to say it for you. It is shocking to me that we have these think tanks with, you know, who knows, nine-figure budgets, $100 million budgets, and they've had them for years and years, and we have political action committees and all this money that's been given to all these causes, and yet there's no reliable American history for kids. They couldn't pencil that into their schedules with all the zillions of dollars sloshing around in D.C. Not one source could think to do this. I know there are a lot of people out there who spend their time day and night criticizing Tom Woods, but they can't bother to do something useful for the movement. It took you to finally say, look, this is ridiculous. Why do we not have this? I think the only way we're going to solve this is by actually doing it. So number one, thank you for doing it. Number two, I think the way some of the history, as you mentioned, in the 1760s and onward is portrayed, it's almost like they're trying to make it seem weird and irrelevant to people today, especially the emphasis on, quote, no taxation without representation. What a boring thing to campaign on. I mean, The point was no legislation without representation. It wasn't just taxes, it was anything, which means what they were fighting for was local self-government, which means that all these supposedly controversial Supreme Court cases, they're just implementing that. Is that idea of the American Revolution, of local self-government, not having some unaccountable institution making the decisions for you or threatening to overturn what you've decided on the local level. So yeah, we should be cheering the Supreme Court when it overturns Roe versus Wade, because that decision ran counter to the American tradition.
But that's the problem, Tom. So few people understand the American tradition. So it's always, we evaluate every issue on its face. We just react to what is happening. And the only filter that we apply to modern events is just personal preference or, you know, community standards, you know, social proof and what our peer groups think. Like, the philosophical foundations of America are eroding. And that to me is a big worry, because we've got, you know, just recently we celebrated the Independence Day, what people call the 4th of July, which I've always found bizarre, because it's like, do we call Christmas the 25th of December? Right? Can we at least use the word and remember what this is about? And people are with their barbecues and their fireworks, and that's all great. Let's have a good time. But like, how many of those people celebrating independence do anything about it? Are we just celebrating this like superficial veneer of what we think America is? Meanwhile, you know, the foundation is rotting at its core. Elijah and I, in fact, Elijah gets a ton of credit for this book. We decided to base this book, as we do with our other children's books, on an original text, right? We take, you know, The Road to Serfdom or Human Action or Atlas Shrugged, and, you know, we turn them into kids' books. This book is really a children's version of Murray Rothbard's Conceived in Liberty. Elijah especially went deep into that book, and we've extracted all kinds of things with Rothbard's perspective. Patrick Newman at the Mises Institute and many other historians have been advising us on this book to really capture the classical liberal and libertarian type of perspective on American history, which, of course, you know, I don't need to mention, is entirely absent from the modern social studies books and the like. And so this is a distillation of, you know, Rothbard's kind of perspective. We wrote the acknowledgement at the beginning of the book to Rothbard because, man, it was Elijah and I can't tell you how many times as we're working on this book, we would look at each other and say, like, many occasions we would have this feeling, how in the world did Rothbard have the source material and the access to documents, like, you know, pre-internet, he's scribbling on his, you know, yellow pad and notepad and whatever. Like, for us doing this with the internet, it was hard. For him to do it pre-internet, and just, it was mind-blowing how rich Conceived in Liberty was with all these historical nuggets and commentaries and analysis. And so it was an amazing opportunity for Elijah and I to go deep into Rothbard's head in American history and then pull out of it a lot of stuff that we could teach to kids.
Yeah, Conceived in Liberty is almost ridiculous. The command he has of everything. And he's completely acquainted with all the secondary literature. And remember that Conceived in Liberty for Rothbard was a spare time project. It wasn't his primary focus. It was, you know, when he had time, he would get to his multi-volume history of the United States. It's just
incredible.
Just crazy. Now, obviously, one thing we can also say, and it's a cliche these days, is the knowledge of American history that most Americans think they have is pretty poor. And let me give you one somewhat topical example. Just the other day, you may have seen this, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was not happy with the Supreme Court these days, said that it's the job of Congress and the president to keep the Supreme Court in check. What are you talking about? It's the job of the court to keep the whole thing in check. And of course, I mean, maybe I would be happy if she took Thomas Jefferson's concurrent review position that all three branches have a responsibility to uphold the Constitution. If she wanted to say that, that would be fine. And I am not sure she even is aware of that, that that was Jefferson's opinion. But her view is that the Supreme Court needs to be held in check by these other branches. And by held in check, I mean, it's not that the Supreme Court is doing too much to oppress people. It's that it's not doing enough to follow her agenda. And so it needs to be kept in check. I don't even know what she thinks checks and balances are for. I can't make anything coherent out of this.
Well, that's why when people ask the age range of the Tuttleton's books, I say, you know, kids age 5 to 10 and members of Congress. So right. She may need to pick up the book herself. It's like with nullification, Tom. That was, in fact, you know, as I think about history, I hated history in school. I did poorly in it. I hated the pump and dump of like being forced to memorize crap that had no relevance to me, regurgitate it for a test, whatever. So I was always really burned out and turned off to history. All the way fast forward till after college, you know, I encounter Ron Paul. He's got his recommended people. You're on it. I read Nullification. And like suddenly history starts becoming interesting to me because history is just story. It's framing the past so we can think of how to live today. Use AOC as an example, right? You get all these lefties who, when Roe v. Wade comes down, they start talking nullification. That you start hearing these like whispers among the left about, oh, you know, we got to nullify it. We got to like, you know, secede or I don't know what, right? We need to have sanctuary cities. And then, of course, they're inconsistent because when it's on an issue that they disagree with, and how dare you could think of, you know, that type of treasonous behavior. So the inconsistency is a big problem, but it shows how selective they are with like analyzing history. For me, what I always hated was learning history qua history of like, you need to know these things because we've deemed them important. And to me, that's not at all the purpose of history. I think of like when I was in high school, I was bullied a lot. I was a late bloomer. I was picked on, thrown in trash cans, all kinds of stuff. It was miserable. And so I can really be hung up on that and feel like a victim and have a chip on my shoulder and be angry with people or whatever. Like I could frame my own past in that way to dictate and influence how I act today. Or I could frame the past as like, hey, let's have compassion on the bully because maybe they were being beaten at home by their dad for all I know, or you know, they didn't know any better, or hey, growth opportunity for Connor to really have to figure out how to stand up or defend myself or whatever. And so I can frame my past in a different way where now I'm empowered to act, you know, differently today, have more compassion, have more, you know, help the little guy, whatever. So when I think of history, when Elijah and I were writing this book, for me, the motivating thing was like, not just saying, hey guys, here's what happened in the past. It's more, how can we let the past influence our lives today? And what do we need to think, understand, and do in today's world? And so what is there in the past that we can mine and learn from to help kids today understand how the world works and how they can influence it? That to me is what history should be all about. As I read these textbooks, they're miserable. They don't have any of that like modern connection or relevance. And so what we're trying to do, I mean, you know, it's no small feat, is fix history education. We're going to be hiring someone on our team who's just going to go shop this around to schools across the country, get kids using this, you know, officially in the classroom, get them, you know, read around the dinner table and families. Like we are, Elijah and I, super, super fired up about this because everything out there in American history education, at least for kids, in our view, is totally broken. And we think this new book, America's History, is the solution.
Are you the primary author of the book?
So I am, but this one was a team effort for Elijah and I. We had illustrators helping us. We had other writers helping us. So we built a team. This is 2.5 years in the making. So this has been a massive endeavor. We've had historians consulting with us. So this is not your average Tuttle Twins book where I can just bang it out. I'll give you an example. I just finished our 13th book, which we're hoping to publish later this year, based off of Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. So that's the next children's Tuttle Twins book. That's just Connor. I can bang out these other Tuttle Twins books. This one, we have just spent so much time working on this. And so we built a team of people to help Elijah and I get it done.
Hey, folks, quick message from our friends at BetterHelp. We all know the importance of staying in good physical condition. This contributes to how we feel every day and to our longevity. But we also need to think about our mental state and taking care of our minds. You got to get that inner game right. For example, it's impossible to be an entrepreneur if you constantly have an inner voice telling you that you're no good and this isn't for you and you'll never succeed. Not to mention your quality of life deteriorates when you're under an awful lot of stress or when you have personal conflicts in your life. So take care of this important side of who you are with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat-only therapy sessions, so you don't even have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. And I've used BetterHelp myself. I was in a situation where I just needed a neutral third party to talk through some things with me. Not anybody with a vested interest who was going to say what I wanted to hear, but I just needed to talk to somebody, and wow, did it work. And it's much more affordable than in-person therapy. And you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. So take action. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/woods. That's betterhelp.com/woods. You know, you were talking about how we make history relevant. And it just reminds me, I know this goes just beyond where you were in this particular book, but years and years ago, I used to talk about the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions of 1798 as a historian and just talk about them as an interesting moment in American history where you had these states backed by Thomas Jefferson's own ideas. I mean, Jefferson really was the primary drafter of the resolutions in Kentucky and then the follow-up 1799 resolutions. And these were saying that the federal government is a limited government that has only a few enumerated powers, that the remainder rest with the states and the people. And they drew the conclusion that, therefore, if the federal government reaches beyond those powers, well, the states created the federal government, after all. The Frankenstein monster doesn't tell Dr. Frankenstein what to do. At least that's not how it's supposed to work. The creator exerts power over the created thing. And so the states should be able to say, well, we're not doing that because we never gave you that particular power. So I would explain that as a historian. And I had a lot of people find that very interesting, and they hadn't heard about it before. And then all of a sudden, I noticed that some people, like around 2009 or so, started to think, well, if they could do that in 1798, why don't we try that now? And so we started to see, I mean, this was a few years after the 10th Amendment Center was created, but yep. I think some of those early Tea Party people really did draw from this that there is a lesson for today. And this may be a tool that can be used today. And we have seen the states defy the federal government on a wide variety of things. And they're inspired by this old lesson from American history that almost none of them learned about in school. And that I didn't think I was talking current events. I was talking about an old 200-year-old thing. And then right before my eyes, I watched it be converted from a story confined to dusty old books being converted into real events before my eyes. That was an amazing thing.
Tom, let's bring this home. Maybe you don't remember this, so it'll be a trip down memory lane for both of us. Before you and I met and started collaborating on various projects, my first interaction with you, at least that I recall from memory, is I reached out having read Nullification, and I said, hey, I want to buy copies in bulk. I bought a copy for every member of our legislature here in Utah, for the governor, for the attorney general. Sent them all out with a personal note saying, hey guys, you know, we need to read this and think about what to do. I headed up at the time, Michael Bolden was doing a state chapter model of the 10th Amendment Center. So I ran the state chapter here in Utah. We started working with legislators based on your book. I had all these legislators. Oh my gosh, wow, I had no idea we could do something like this. And so we started working with state legislators. We started fighting later. You know, we had Obamacare. We had Real ID, which was a big kind of nullification fight with a lot of states standing up. Later for us, medical marijuana, you know. And so a lot of these efforts, I was able to plant these seeds with your nullification book and get these state legislators to realize the power that they and we here in the state have, at least according to this historical, you know, model and Jeffersonian idea. And so exactly, like history can come alive and we don't often realize the power of these ideas to be applied today. And I've seen it a decade ago with your book in my own life. And I think we can see a lot more of it if we are more intentional about talking to people about like, hey, here's how this historical thing applies. Let's make a better world today.
Did you do the kind of testing that you do with a simple Tuttle Twins book? Like, have any younger people read this manuscript?
Yeah, no, we've done a lot. We've had kind of beta testing families. Certainly, as I said, the historians have been guiding us to make sure everything's accurate and well said. We sent out early copies of the, like advanced copies of the book to families to have them not also just, hey, any last typos you can find, let us know. But like, you know, is there any kind of joke that's not landing or anything that's confusing? And I was begging for critical feedback at the end because I was getting paranoid that after 2 years of working on this, I was missing something, right? We're going to go to print and there's going to be an error or a mistake. And so I'm begging these families, tell me what's wrong. Tell me what you don't like. Tell me what's not working. And I couldn't get anything out of them because all I was getting was effusive praise of like, holy crap, my kids are like binging on this and the conversations we're having are amazing, which is great. And we love that. And but I'm like trying to extract from them actionable negatives that I can go fix before we go to print. And I was struggling. So to me, that's kind of an early indication that this is going to be just a hit. We just launched the book a few days ago. Our poor warehouse team, I was over there the other morning and they are just buried under orders, which is a wonderful thing. So I'm confident, super hopeful that this book is, you know, and not just book. We haven't mentioned, Tom, we produce curriculum that goes with it. We got like 200 pages of curriculum activities that go with every chapter. We've got the audiobook, which is like 6 hours long for the whole thing. We've got these videos we've made. So there's a whole bundle of resources because we want mom and dad, the family, to say like, let's dive into this and immerse ourselves in American history, not in a boring textbook way, but in a fun, empowering narrative story way where we can connect it to our lives and become better people as a result.
Wow. Okay. That is great. Maybe you told me about that part, but I forgot. So it's really, really is the whole package. Really is the whole package. That is amazing. I am so glad that this project has come to fruition. And I hope all the volumes see the light of day. I mean, this, I can't wait for your initial, I know you've been talking about it a little bit, but the initial blast of now they're available to your list, that we're ready to ship them out to you this very moment. I want you to keep me posted on how it does. And of course, I want my folks who have kids to use this resource. Because again, what else are you going to use? What else are you going to use? And I don't think you can improve on this. Of course, I've seen it myself. And I don't think you can improve on it. So tomwoods.com/history is where you can get it. I was saying to Connor, isn't it funny that there was nothing at tomwoods.com/history before? I don't think there is. So it's now, this is where you can get America's history from the team that brought you the Tuttle Twins that everybody loves. Now, this is the one. This is the one. And by the way, maybe there's a chance you might be able to get some media exposure for this.
Yeah, no, we've hired a publicist. In fact, we just commissioned a poll, Tom, to try and find out how people feel across the country about how K-12 American history education is going. And there were like 2,000 respondents, fully standard scientific poll. And it is abysmal. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I wasn't prepared, but it's like the vast, vast majority of people give negative reviews to how history education is being done. They rank schools mostly with D's and F's when it comes to teaching the ideas of our past. And so I think we're tapping into this widespread understanding that there's a problem. So here we come with a solution. I think it's well-timed. Yeah, we've hired a publicist. We just did officially launch. So it is now available. 4th of July, that's when we were trying it, or Independence Day. Here I am saying 4th of July when I said earlier that I try not to say that. But the big launch has happened. We're definitely trying to blow this up, get media attention. Hopefully CNN will attack us again like they did a few months ago that helped us sell tens of thousands of books.
Geez, so. What a dumb move on their part. I was so happy
we monetized our haters, Tom.
You did. I used you as an example when I spoke at the Libertarian Party convention and I talked about how you should normally ignore your haters, but that there are several exceptions. And one of them is when you can make money off your haters. And I gave you as a prime example. And I was so proud to see, it was like a tear in my eye that, there's Connor, right? He's no longer is he a young, naive tech guy working on the Tom Woods team. He is the mature fighter for what's good and true out there in the world and knows just the tactics to use. So,
well, I told everyone, I said, if anyone knows anyone at MSNBC so they can come pile on us and attack us as well, let me know, because that CNN thing was a beauty. And yeah. Hopefully we'll, you know, so like we're going to go try and be provocative with the 16, 19 people. We're going to call this the 12, 15 project and have like another little campaign this fall where we attack the 16, 19 project. So maybe, you know, AOC and her buddies will attack us. We'll see. We're going to try and like poke at them and see if they fight back.
Yeah. Good. I hope they do. All right. Thanks, Connor. tomwoods.com/history for you guys to go grab one of those. And keep me posted.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, folks, tomwoods.com/history is the link. You're going to be delighted that you own this very, very important and long-awaited book. Also, tomorrow, I'm going to be finishing up my series on the villainy of the Federal Reserve System. Now, if you haven't heard the other episodes in that series, I'll have them all linked on tomorrow's show notes page. But I've designed each of these three episodes in such a way that you can listen to each one independently of the others. So it doesn't build on knowledge you got in the last one. This is not like you're learning algebra or something. You can listen to these as distinct episodes. But of course, if you listen to all of them, you probably get the most out of it. But tomorrow, we really get to the crux of the matter of how the Fed affects people's lives in an especially negative way. So that will be fun. Then also this week, our old friend Scott Horton has a brand new book. How about that? And we're going to have him back on to talk about it. It's on a topic you may not be expecting, but there's no way it's going to be boring because we're talking about Scott Horton. And love Scott or hate Scott, I don't know anybody who hates Scott, but whatever, however you feel about him, he ain't boring. We can all agree on that. So that'll be a lot of fun. So make sure you keep on tuning in to the old Tom Woods show because you're going to get some really great stuff this week. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.